What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Ever since I was a kid, when I would rent Jaws from the local video store on a weekly basis, the ocean has simultaneously been the most captivating place for me and also my worst fear.
That's true. You used to rent Jaws on practically every week, and I don't know why your parents didn't just buy it.
Yeah, me neither. We probably wasted like hundreds and hundreds of dollars in that rental video, and I probably single-handedly kept that video store on life support for years.
Well, that's really nice of you.
Yeah, well, I was just doing my part, I guess. But really, it's a testament to the ocean and the mystery of that watery wilderness that kept me coming back for more. And in spite of the fact that it's always been my greatest fear, it was something I always wanted to face and experience for myself as well.
And that's exactly what we did in Biscayne National Park in South Florida, the largest aquatic park in the National Park Service.
Yeah, this is a park where getting into the water is paramount. You can't come here and not do something at least on top of the water, if not under it. After all, 95% of this 172,000-acre park is water, and as excited as I was to dive in, literally, I was also facing a lifetime's worth of built-up fear and anxiety.
But part of your love for national parks is about facing fears, even if they're unrealistic as Jaws.
Yeah, I'm going to put on my snorkel flippers, sidestep that little bit of shade you just tossed my way, and make the plunge into this episode on Biscayne National Park, which also features a very special guest, Sandra Ramos. So stay tuned. Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia, a production of iHeartRadio.
We sold our loft in Chicago, moved into an RV full-time, and now we're traveling the country with our dog, Finn, exploring America's national parks. And today, we're talking about Biscayne National Park in South Florida.
As we mentioned, Biscayne National Park covers a little more than 170,000 acres in South Florida in the Biscayne Bay just south of Miami. Literally, you could see the Miami skyline from this park.
And it only takes about an hour to get here from South Beach, too, which is crazy and really awesome. Obviously, it's even less if you're in downtown Miami or South Miami. So it's super accessible for city dwellers or visitors to Miami who might be looking for a change of pace from all the South Beach clubs or volleyball competitions you might be participating in.
Yeah, even though it's only about 40 miles from Miami, Biscayne National Park feels worlds apart. And that's a great thing to have such a great getaway so close to that.
Yeah, I know. I've been to Biscayne a couple times now, once with you in our RV as part of a greater South Florida Everglades trip, which was epic and amazing.
Yes.
And recently as well on a solo road trip, which I was driving through like Miami and the Keys. And on that trip, I was able to start my morning with coffee and pastries in Wynwood, this really awesome neighborhood in Miami. And then literally like an hour later, I was at Biscayne National Park with plenty of time to make my boating reservation out to Boca Chica Key. So it's the best of both worlds. You can have it all.
Yeah, not many national parks can claim this kind of convenient proximity to major cities, which just goes to show that there's always gems in your backyard.
Yeah, and Biscayne is an absolute gem. Not a lot of people are really aware of this one, I think, especially in the context of South Florida, where nearby Everglades gets all the attention, I think. Not only is Biscayne much smaller size-wise compared to Everglades, but it only gets about 500,000 visitors, which is nothing to scoff at, of course, but still, you know.
Yeah, it's actually a great thing, though, since this keeps the park less crowded and easier to explore, which is important because a lot of the activities here require advanced reservations and tours for their tours. Plus, since we're driving an RV, it makes it easier for us to get that little parking space.
Yes, and that's very important, too, because the Dante Fiscal Visitor Center parking lot is really tiny.
Yeah, it is. Another thing that is that Biscayne is much younger than Everglades as well. It was designated as a national park in 1980, 46 years after Everglades was made a national park.
Yes. I feel like Biscayne and Everglades really have a sibling-type relationship going on. And Biscayne, obviously, would be the younger sibling who too often gets overshadowed by the popularity and accomplishments of the older sibling.
I feel that.
Yeah. And I'm not just saying that as someone who has two younger siblings and happens to be very accomplished myself. So that's just a coincidence. That has nothing to do with this metaphor, I assure you.
I'm sure. Yeah. What a coincidence. But it is true enough. Biscayne does get overshadowed a little bit. It really deserves to stand out more, though, because it's an entirely different park than the Everglades, which is right next door. It looks and feels nothing like that park.
Yes, and most importantly, Everglades is absolutely not a park for swimming or snorkeling or going into the water in any capacity for a very good reason. But at Biscayne, it's the opposite. It's all about literally immersing yourself in the ocean.
Sure, there are a lot of wild animals here, but you can't go swimming or snorkeling in areas where there are crocodiles. Mm-hmm. And definitely aren't any, like, great white sharks here, you know, either. Jaws was not filmed here, that's for sure.
Yes. But do you remember when we were out here on our snorkeling trip and after we were all back in the boat, I remember there was some kid on the tour who asked the guides if there were any sharks in the area, and they said yes, which was pretty horrifying. Not the answer I expected nor wanted. I was like, wow, I'm glad you didn't bring that up beforehand.
I mean, that's not really surprising, though. I think in any open ocean water, there's at least a possibility of sharks. But still, nothing too dangerous or scary.
Sure. I would rather not think about it, you know. The most common sharks here, fortunately, are more docile sharks, like lemon sharks and nurse sharks, both of which actually sound kind of sweet and even, like, maternal even.
Yeah.
But then there have also been sightings of other sharks, like hammerheads and black-tip sharks and bull sharks in Biscayne Bay, which are all sharks for my nightmares.
But really, you're more likely to see manatees here than sharks. And worst case is crocodiles, which live among the shores. But like we learned at Everglades, American crocodiles only eat things that can swallow things in one bite. So they have no interest in people.
Great. I'm actually happy to see crocodiles from a safe distance, and I would love to see more of them. But I definitely do not want to be in the water when I do so, of course. I'd like to see them from a boat or from the land, when I'm on the land.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's talk more about my nightmares and our snorkel trip here at Biscayne.
Trails.
So our trip to Biscayne was after we spent a few days at Everglades in January. This was a great time of year to visit Florida's national parks, since the weather is most comfortable and you're more likely to see wildlife.
Yeah, for better or worse. But we had planned to drive our RV to Biscayne for the day, and we had pre-booked a snorkel excursion hosted by the Biscayne National Park Institute. They do a fantastic job, by the way.
They really do. They absolutely do. And this was during the government shutdown. And so they were just doing such a great job of keeping things afloat.
Yeah, oh, literally. We were floating in the boat, and they were also keeping the park accessible and safe for visitors like us. So the main visitor center when we were here was closed because of the shutdown, but the Biscayne National Park Institute made sure that people who did make trip reservations like us were able to keep them and enjoy their time at the park. And we had a great time. I was so relieved because I didn't know what to expect. Everything was kind of up in the air and
all the parks were
handling it differently. So
yeah, so it was nice. So when we first got to that park, we walked along the boardwalk trail as we waited for our tour to start. Which was a really great way
to
start it.
Yeah. Since this park is almost entirely ocean, there really is not a ton of hiking. I mean, there's no hiking.
I was just saying.
There isn't even a ton of, like, walking or land activities here. But this one trail is awesome and totally worthwhile. It's called the Jetty Trail, and altogether it's a little less than a mile out and back along this mangrove line coast and on a boardwalk to this long, narrow jetty out to a birding area where you're likely to see lots of pelicans and herons and frigate birds and mergansers and a whole bunch of others. But that's only if the tide isn't too high that it washes out the trail, of course, because first time we were here, it was open and accessible and great. Last time I was there, most of the trail was underwater, so
it's still beautiful, though.
Did not see it, but yeah.
I remember the water being royal blue, and the mangrove forests were just bright green. The colors were so vivid, and the trail had several benches lined up along the shore. Perfect place to sit and just dream. It was literally picture perfect. And it was just beautiful lookout over Biscayne Bay, especially in the morning.
Yeah, also a picture-perfect place to for me to sit and contemplate my worst fears, looking out over all of it. It's right there. Like, the mere notion of jumping into deep water in the open ocean, it was filling me with anxiety and excitement, though, too. I was kind of going back and forth there.
Yeah, I'm really glad we got to do that snorkel trip, though. This was our first time doing something like this together. It was especially cool to do here because not only did we learn a lot, but we got to snorkel by the third largest coral reef in the world.
That's right. Amazing. Like, a fact I had no idea about. I didn't know there was a coral reef of this size anywhere off the shore of the U.S., that's for sure. So the Florida Reef here is the largest of its kind in North America. So if I'm going to plunge into my aquatic nightmares, I'm glad it was here in a very pretty setting.
Ocean.
So for that snorkeling trip, we made advance reservations online with Biscayne National Park Institute, which works with the park to provide great guided trips to its like park islands and into the open waters for things like kayaking, swimming, shipwrecks. And of course, yeah. Snorkeling.
Yes, of course. So our snorkel trip took about 3 hours in total, and it left in the morning with a pretty moderate group size, probably about 20 of us, all situated on this speedy boat, which got us out several miles into the ocean. And the National Park, the Biscayne National Park Institute, they provide all the gear. So it's pretty easy and open for everyone. So you just make sure to bring water and sunscreen, like the basic necessities like that, and plenty of adrenaline, of course. You're probably going to need that.
The guides based their snorkeling location for the day based on weather conditions. And for ours, they took us out past the Keys to the open ocean where the coral reef was.
And I was so nervous to actually suit up and jump off the side of the boat. This is like something that really goes against everything my mind is telling me to do, all my instincts, and like a lifetime's worth of, you know, obsessively watching Jaws. Because I've been so conditioned from movies like that and others like Open Water and Deep Blue Sea and Lake Placid, giant crocodile. So, you know, this is not something that I'm inclined to do necessarily, but honestly, as soon as you jump in and open your eyes underwater, all of these ideas, all my fears of Jaws were immediately replaced by movies like Finding Nemo. It was suddenly super colorful and tranquil and relaxing, and Finding Nemo is obviously much less terrifying than Jaws.
Really. The only fish we saw here were small and harmless and beautiful, too. It was just a rainbow of color.
It was a rainbow of color. And the fish that you're going to see potentially out by the reef are fish like queen angelfish and blue neon gobies and purple sea fans, all zipping around between floral-shaped coral polyps and sponges, which all of this is like swaying and billowing beautifully back and forth in the gentle tide. And it's captivating to watch and super relaxing, actually. Yeah, and they give you like an hour out there to swim around and look at it all, but I could have just floated out here for much longer.
There's just so much to look at, from the seagrass and algae gardens to all these beautiful schools of fish, literally hundreds of different like fish species at Biscayne, more than 200 of which live in those reefs.
Yeah, and a lot of them have adorable sounding names, which really helps, like parrotfish and squirrelfish. And even things like Christmas tree worms, just so precious. Jeez.
Beautiful.
But even though they all sound cuddly, make sure and keep your distance and not touch any animals, including coral. Coral reefs are incredibly fragile and very vulnerable to human touch, as well as just the oils that come off human skin, too. So keep your distance and be mindful of that.
Yeah, and these ecosystems are super important. They're some of the most biologically diverse and important ecosystems on the planet. And the reefs here account for more than half of Biscayne National Park's protected waters.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So the snorkeling trip, just altogether, and our experience in the water, I thought was really amazing. Not only was it reassuring and relaxing for me, kind of immediately erasing all my anxiety and replacing it with the serenity, but we saw a lot and were able to capture a lot on camera because you brought a GoPro.
Yeah, and it was just one of those moments where you just realize that you are in the ocean and you're being able to watch this beautiful school of fish and all these fish come by and the algae and everything's just waving back and forth and you just forget about the world. Mm-hmm. And you realize where you're at, what you're doing, and just how immersive that experience was.
Yes.
I remember I just literally chased fish. Like, I found one, and I, like, tried to follow it for, like, 10 minutes. And that's all I did. And I went from that one, and I got distracted, like Dory in Finding Nemo. I just went, ooh, another fish. And I just, so I was literally Dory in this, this experience because I just loved just watching it. And, you know, now I think I understand why Dory was such a great character is because that's all of us when we visit national parks and we get into wildlife. Mm-hmm. Is you're inspired by the world. So it's not that she forgot everything. It's that she saw everything.
Yeah. And she just has so much pure excitement and there's an innocence to her too. Fortunately, you have better memory than Dory. So we're here talking about it.
I don't know. And sometimes I'm
very, forgetful. Yeah. But I agree with the sentiment. Like when you're underwater at a place like Biscayne National Park by the coral reef, it kind of washes away like all your kind of day-to-day mundane stresses and stuff. Like when I was out there snorkeling, I certainly wasn't thinking about like, oh, I have a deadline later or like, oh, tax season is in 3 months, you know, whatever. Like all that stuff didn't matter.
It didn't.
While I was out there, I was just thinking like, oh, I'm here in this moment in an environment that is very unusual and foreign to me and to most humans.
It really is. And Ellen, if you ever want to just talk to us about fish and wildlife, just let us know. We'll be here.
Yes, we'll be here. And we're ready to drive back in too, because this trip is so inspiring for us that we actually got our own snorkel gear and wetsuits. So
absolutely. And I realize I have to shave my beard whenever I want to go snorkeling.
Oh yeah, true.
It's a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Talking about nightmares. Like that's worse than getting eaten by jaws for me. But I'll do it because snorkeling is amazing.
Yeah, yes, it is.
History.
But it's not all reefs here at Biscayne. The park is actually divided into four different categories of protected ecosystems, including the reef. There's also the shoreline mangrove forests, the shallow waters of the bay, and the keys, like Elliott Key and Boca Chica Key. And keys, by the way, differ from islands because they are formed on the surface of coral reefs, while islands are land masses that get surrounded by water or they're formed by volcanic events. Keys look a lot like islands, so easily confused.
Yep.
Kind of like how alligators and crocodiles can look alike at first. But when you examine like the details and just the geography of keys and islands, the differences become more clear.
Yeah, and those different like ecosystems are where you're more likely to see more of the park's famous wildlife, like manatees and crocodiles and sea turtles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a lot here. And there are even a few alligators, too, that have been known to dabble in Biscayne, but they prefer freshwater, which is why you'll primarily see them at Everglades next door, or most any other waterway in Florida, which is kind of chilling.
Yeah. So let's back it up and talk more about the history here at Biscayne as well. Because even though there's keys look small, they actually have a surprising amount of human history as well.
They do. And very surprising. So it all started with native peoples of the Glades culture who first inhabited present day Biscayne Bay like 10,000 years ago before it was entirely filled with water. And then some 4,000 years ago, the Tequesta people lived on the Keys and along the shore. They did this until Spanish explorers moved into Florida and took over the area.
Joke's on them, though, because the coral reef here is responsible for lots of Spanish shipwrecks, some of which you can explore on those snorkeling tours. All in all, there are about more than 40 shipwrecks within the park's waters.
It's a lot. And that would be so cool to go back here and do like a shipwreck snorkel tour. That would be amazing. I've never done anything like that.
Yeah. But the keys were eventually used for farming things like pineapples and tomatoes, weirdly enough, into the 1900s. But the area's hurricanes and rocky terrain just made it too difficult to keep doing that.
Right. My favorite thing is what happened next, though. Once the keys were largely abandoned for farming purposes, they were transformed into the next big thing. Party mansions.
It's kind of crazy. We learned about this on the boat ride past Boca Chica Key, actually, about how in the like early 1900s, rich Miami residents started building mansions on the Keys as their vacation home and party pads.
Yes, as one does. And it's just so laughably absurd and decadent, which I think is why it's so like intriguing and hilarious, which it's just like par for the course for humanity, right? So you have people like Mark C. Honeywell, who had a mansion on Boca Chica Key, and he gave this mansion its own lighthouse.
Yes.
Which you can see today if you go to Boca Chica Key. And it's one of the most photographed sites in the park. It's gotten pretty iconic. And then there was also the Coco Lobo K Club, which was owned by rich party animals like Garfield Wood and B.B. Rebozo, who was actually close friends with President Nixon. And then there's this whole other part of the park called Stiltsville, the series of buildings that were built on stilts jutting out of northern Biscayne Bay. And this served as a gambling mecca and drinking den during Prohibition for a while.
Yeah, at its height, there were 27 different structures, only accessible by boat. But like most things in this part of the country, hurricanes made it very difficult, destroyed several of them. Once the remnants of Stiltsville was added to the national park in 1985, there were only 7 structures standing. And today you can visit them by permit.
Yeah, and as crazy and ridiculous as all this lavishness and frivolity sounds, it didn't stop there. Some people in South Florida weren't content with simply having island party mansions. They also wanted to string all these keys together to form a continuous drivable route from Miami out to Key West to capitalize more and more on tourism to the area.
Yeah, since Key Largo was the first reachable by car, a lot of people saw these similar keys in Biscayne Bay as neglected or wasted, like they had no value of their own. So they wanted to connect them all and build homes on them, too.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, they wanted to dredge up acreage from the bay to create a jet port and a seaport, and then even establish this larger island city called Islandia, which is nuts.
Mm.
And even though Parklandia and Islandia share a suffix, I do not approve.
Thank God.
No. And fortunately, neither did a lot of other advocates who wanted to protect the area as a national park, including Juanita Green, a newspaper writer from the Miami Herald, and even vacuum titan Herbert W. Hoover Jr., who visited the area as a young boy and became obsessed with it and really appreciated and valued its, you know, natural features.
Yes.
And so because of this, he tried to persuade government legislators to protect it by taking them on blimp tours over the bay and showing off how beautiful it was. Like, I can't make this stuff up. Blimp tours.
No, you really can't. And with the support for national parks protection rising, these greedy developers were getting angry and spiteful. So they decided to bulldoze a 6-lane highway on Elliott Key in hopes that if they messed it up enough, no one would want to protect it after all.
Selfish monsters. It's so immature, right? It's like, oh, well, if we can have it, then we're just going to mess it all up and no one can have it.
It's horrible.
The intent, which is like such a sore loser mentality. But despite all of this and this ridiculous behavior, Biscayne National Monument was first established in 1968, thanks to advocates like Representative Dante Fascell, who the visitor center is now named after. And then even better, that Spite Highway, as it's called now, which was they tore up to with the intent to tarnish the land, that's grown over naturally to become the park's only main hiking trail, and it's this miles-long trek through tropical hardwood forest on Elliott Key.
Yeah, so between the party mansions and the gambling shacks and the coral reef and Spite, I think it's safe to say that Biscayne National Park has some of the most colorful history of any national park.
Yeah, that history is definitely as colorful as the reef itself, I'd say. And after this quick break, we're going to talk with our guest for this episode, Sandra Ramos.
Probiotics aren't a trend anymore. They're a mainstay in the health and wellness aisle of your favorite store. And Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls are the easiest way to introduce a probiotic into your routine. I mean, they're just what they sound like, adorable little pearls that couldn't be easier to take. But they still pack that probiotic punch. Each tiny pearl has 1 billion active cultures and protect against occasional bloating, constipation, and digestive discomfort. And they actually support both digestive and vaginal health, so that's a win-win. And according to my little fact sheet here, they're designed with a triple layer coating that protects each pearl from stomach acid, so they can make it all the way to your small intestine where they're needed most. You probably didn't think we'd be talking about the small intestine today, did you? Well, digestive health is kind of important. If you know, you know. To learn more about Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls and how they can fit into your routine, visit naturesway.com.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory 5-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today we're talking about Biscayne National Park in Florida.
Yes, and we are bringing on our special guest, Sanja Ramos, also known as at National Park Patch Lady.
On Instagram. Yes.
And we're so excited to talk to Sanja because of her deep love and history of Biscayne National Park. I mean, she's loves it so much that she even has an art exhibit that was featured there, her photography exhibit. And she's just such a wonderful resource to our community of national parks travelers.
Yeah, she has a real kinship with Biscayne National Park, it seems. And she's friends with the park rangers there. She's been several times. So this is like one of her spirit parks, it seems like. You know, we all have these like connections to different places. And this is a place that she's not only super familiar with, but and very experienced with, but a place that she is just super passionate about. So we know that she'll have a lot of great things to talk about with Biscayne, and we're excited to learn more from her and also just get more inspired because she's the most inspiring person that I think we follow on Instagram. So,
and we can't wait to dive into mm-hmm. this.
Yeah, we're huge Instagram fans and now Instagram friends, and we're so excited to have her on this week.
So, Sanja, where were you before national parks became part of your life?
Oh, wow. So, I grew up in New Orleans and moved to Los Angeles and my junior year of high school and got really involved in politics. And so, I had spent the last 20 years running political campaigns from Oregon State to Virginia. And it was a lot of fun. And so, I sort of bounced back between working for government officials and running political campaigns, and just sort of reached a point where I had just had enough, and I was just exhausted because a lot of people don't realize that it's a 24/7 job, and you don't really have a life. And I really became burnt out by it. So before national parks sort of took over everything and anything, including my house. I was, you know, in the trenches fighting the good fight.
That's wonderful. When I was in Illinois, I fought for marriage equality. And it was one of those things of telling my story of like serving during Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And it's a battle. And just being an extra person, like, I mean, I knocked on 7,000 doors, talked to 26 different state representatives, the governor of Illinois two different times, like different things like that. And that was enough. Like, that was exhausting. I couldn't imagine actually running these campaigns and working within the like interweb of them because, like you're saying, it's 24/7. It's exhausting.
Yeah, and it 24/7 goes on for like a year and a half. It's not like it's 24/7 for a month or two. It's a year and a half. And even when you're on the government side doing policy, it's still your phone is never turned off. Your life is never your own. And it can take a toll on you for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I never didn't believe in what I was doing. And I think that that's really what drove me for as long as I did.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So nowadays, you actually, we see on your Instagram that you hang out with national park rangers all the time. It's like you're a rock star.
It's more like they're the rock stars, really. I'm just sort of the groupie.
I love it because I just love seeing you. You're traveling, you're actually talking, you're having conversations with park rangers. And it's what a lot of people just don't do that. Like we haven't really, we've done that on tours and different things, but it's really beautiful to see you just really digging in there and finding out the important parts of national parks.
Thanks. You know, for me, you know, I've spent time, money and energy to get there. And one of the things I learned really early on in my national parks travels is the park rangers are immense resources.
Yes.
And one of the things that I sort of developed in the process was the first thing I do is go to a visitor center, find a friendly park ranger and ask one question, which is, what is your favorite part of the park?
Yes.
And because I'm now getting firsthand from a person whose job it is as a steward of that land and knows it better than anyone, what not only am I engaging them personally and wanting to learn about them, which I'm sure they don't get very often, but I get to learn about the best parts of the park that most people don't ask about.
Absolutely.
So it's become a ritual of mine, and it's really how I've formed bonds with really amazing people with a wealth of knowledge that I couldn't even scratch the surface on. And these folks are just so enthusiastic and wonderful. And so it's really been a pleasure to meet them and become friends. And I'm just honored that I get to hang out with them.
Yeah, you just actually changed the way I think we visit national parks because when we go up, we ask like the normal questions and, you know, we don't, I think there's the art of conversation really is like, it's kind of like when you're sitting down at a restaurant and you can either just order your food and not look at the waitress, or you can turn your whole body to that waitress and ask her different questions about her life and just simple things. Like, how's your day going? But like make that true eye contact to where they actually feel like you're talking to them versus it's like, you know, we've made that mistake where we're just like, we go into a national park and we're like, where's the map? Like, where can I collect this? You know, where can I collect my patches?
Right.
But you can really just change that conversation by like, you know, the way that you approach a park ranger. And I think that that's probably what you're really great at. I can see that within you. It shows through in your Instagram at National Park Patch Lady. And so I just really, really love that. And where did actually that come from? Where did National Parks Patch Lady come from?
Oh, yeah. Good question.
Oh, it's sort of embarrassing. So when I started this journey, so I have a really weird OCD where I just, you know, collect things. And so my house is sort of a hodgepodge of collections. And one of the things in national parks that I really dug were the patches. You know, you see them on people's backpacks and whatnot. So I just started this collection and throwing them in a box. And a friend of mine had come over and we were talking about it one day. And he decided to create a meme of a photograph that a friend took of me in sort of a dark bar and a dark leather chair with just sort of like a spotlight, sliver of light coming through the window. And he, the meme said, National Park Patch Lady on the History Channel. And he posted it. And my friends were like, oh my God, we would totally watch that. And because I sort of became this nerd of history because of my love of politics and sociology. And it's one of the things that that really drew me to the parks, right, was all of the things that I missed about being in politics once I retired. Yeah. But I didn't know how to sort of have that outlet. And so they just sort of laughed at me because I always get these weird, you know, oh my God, this is my new obsession. only this one has carried on for like 7 years now. So they're sort of like, oh, I guess she's in for the long haul. So it started as a meme of a friend of mine trying to mock me.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you. Yes. Like, thank your friend for us.
So it's sort of funny. So I sort of adopted it. And then a really beautiful friend of mine in Denver created a logo. And then it just sort of took off. So it,
Wow. I love that.
Thank you.
Well, I have a question for you. And this one, before we kind of talk about Biscayne and that park, was I know that you have a special connection with Gettysburg in particular. I remember when we were talking about it on an Instagram when our Gettysburg episode came out, and then I saw mention of it when I was at Biscayne and I saw your photography exhibit, which we'll talk about later too. So I know you have, it seems like you have a pretty formative experience there. Is that right?
I did. So about 9 years ago, I retired from my political career for a variety of reasons, including it just battered me physically and emotionally. I ended up on the verge of manic depression and bipolar disorder. And so I had to leave a situation. I also developed an alcohol problem. And so I knew that I needed to get out and get healthy, and I didn't know how to do that. And at the time, I had just moved back to Washington, D.C., which is sort of the epicenter of politics, and trying to retire from politics and being in the epicenter of it is, you know, not exactly conducive to a healthy environment. But I really had no choice at that point. Trying to navigate Washington, D.C. while not being in politics is really, really difficult and sort of didn't help my mental state. And a friend of mine who I had worked with on the Hill was going to go out to Gettysburg and Antietam and invited me to sort of tag along. And, you know, and I didn't really think anything of it. And honestly, I didn't really even want to go. But I will tell you that I arrived and it was everything that I didn't know I needed in my life.
Yeah.
Is really the only way to explain it. It was nature, it was open space, it was history, it was the love of our country, it was being a patriot, it was everything that I wanted. And I started crying, and we spent 24 hours in Gettysburg, and we went on to Antietam, and again, it was this powerful emotional connection for me. And I was really embarrassed because having been a congressional staffer, I had never really paid attention to the National Park Service.
Right.
And I sort of beat myself up over it now, thinking there was so much I could have done in that position to help the parks, but I just didn't have the awareness. And so when I got back home to DC, I researched the National Park Service and realized at the time, I think there were 408 national park sites, and realized that was an amazing mission to sort of give myself. And it sort of filled a void of a lot of things that I needed in my life. And I will tell you that the parks have really saved me. Nature is a place for us to relax. Nature is a place for us to connect with our humanity and ourselves. And I don't think if I had connected and found the national parks when I did, I would not be where I am today. I would not be in a healthy emotional space where I feel like not only am I learning and growing as a person, but I'm able to be in nature.
I'm literally crying.
Tearing
up because that's it. Like what these national parks bring us. I mean, I swear that, you know, for us, it didn't just bring us closer together. I believe it truly just saved our relationship. And our marriage and everything, you know, and it's just beautiful to see how these national parks save us from ourselves, from depression, anxiety, from relationship issues to being just like swamped in everyday life. And everything you just said was just so spot on.
And there's so much stigma around mental health issues, right? But when you're in nature and when you're in the parks, you don't have that. And all of a sudden, all of those panic attacks you have and all the anxiety just disappears. And for a brief moment, you can just be who you are. And, you know, I don't know anyone who's never felt magical in a park. Have you? Have y'all ever met anyone who doesn't feel amazing in a park? And so I think it just brings out the best in us. And I really want to believe that. And so, you know, for me, the parks are everything. And all of this is not about anything other than I want more people to enjoy the parks, particularly the smaller parks that don't get as much attention.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
And that's one of our biggest goals is to introduce all these different parks outside of the big national parks.
So yes.
The seashores, the monuments.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
All of those are just so gorgeous. And that's why we brought season two to be a national park, a national seashore, a national park,
mix
a national monument.
Yeah.
To mix it up and just really show people that there's nature in their backyard. They just have to look.
Right.
Yeah. And I think this is actually perfect segue, because the thing I was referencing earlier was you had a photography exhibit at Biscayne National Park, and I saw it. I went down there and I saw it. Luckily, I think I was there like the last week. I think you mentioned that it was running, and that was the topic of this exhibit, were these lesser-known national parks. And I thought that was so wonderful to see them highlighted. And not only were the photos gorgeous, but like so much fascinating information, helpful information, incredible insight. So I would love to hear more about that exhibit and how you compiled it and what kind of, you know, led to that happening, and at Biscayne National Park in particular, too.
Please.
Sure. Well, I appreciate you visiting, and thank you so much for the kind words about it. It was really a labor of love. You know, I've been traveling to national parks for 7 years now, and I've always sort of had a camera in my hand, but I never took it seriously until I retired from politics and didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And so so I just had this collection of photos, and 3-ish years ago, got up enough nerve to start an Instagram account and start putting them online, and have made tremendous friends. I mean, that's how we met, which I'm extraordinarily grateful for.
Same.
You know, and in that process, you know, had conversations with people about the stories of these parks and what direction I wanted to do. And that was really important for me as a history geek and a sociology geek and all of those things that the park, that I really love about the parks. I wanted to share those stories. And so that's sort of my goal, is to talk about those. And so a few years ago, when I was down in Biscayne National Park, I had met Ranger Gary Bremen, who has since become a very dear close friend of mine. And he graciously asked if I wanted to exhibit my work at Biscayne. And I think I started crying. And then I went into denial. I was like, no, you don't really want my work. And it's like, and then sort of really thought about it. And one of the passions that he and I both share is the passions for the smaller parks, right? The historical parks, the national landmarks, the national monuments, the national seashores. Because those, to me, really represent America. I mean, the Big 61, you can ask anyone in America and they can probably name 3 or 4 big national parks. But if you ask them about a monument, a military park, a battlefield, that number is going to get significantly smaller. But there's so much more, to me, what the real national park is.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's what really, I mean, they have the nature and the sweeping landscapes, but they also have so much more. And so I sort of decided on beyond the icons and really focus on parks that are maybe some of them were big 61 parks for sure, but are lesser known, like Guadalupe Mountains, like Big Bend. But also talked about, you know, places like New Orleans Jazz. Who knew that the entire city of New Orleans was a national historical site? Two, in fact, if you count Jean Lafitte National Historical Park, right? You know, places like Maggie L. Walker National Historical Park in Richmond, Virginia, which is my favorite national historical park.
Right.
It's about a woman who was the first president of a bank in the United States shortly after the Civil War, African-American woman in the seat of the Confederacy who fought for education, who fought for financial freedoms for these folks who didn't have that access, who was, you know, who was a peer of people like W.E.B. Du Bois, who, but you never hear her name. And
right.
The part keeps her story alive and keeps her family alive. And so those kind of places just really fascinate me. And so that's what the exhibit was about, was really highlighting smaller parks that have amazing stories that we should all know.
Yes. I think the wildlife and ecology of the 61 are huge. But then there's so much more of the history of who we are as human beings in America that really are highlighted in outside of that 61. And that's exactly what we found. Recently, we just went to, I'm going to slaughter this name, Okmulgee.
Okmulgee, in Georgia.
Which is a national monument. And it was about the Native American history and heritage before, you know, these lands were taken. And then the afterwards, the digging of it and the archaeology behind it. And it's been inhabited by people for 17,000 years. And it's like, it's just this beautiful piece of history that's like, we need to shine more lights on those. And when we find our parks, I realize that there's like 419 now.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and the folks who, you know, the caretakers, the park rangers, one of my favorite experiences was going down to Cane River Creole in Natchitoches, Louisiana, and talking with, I'm gonna totally mess this up. He is an anthro-ethno-archaeologist, Ranger Dusty Fuqua down in Cane River. And he took me through the collection and it was just amazing. And I grew up in New Orleans and so I thought I knew Louisiana history. Man, learning about that kind of stuff was just soul-shaking. I mean, it was just beautiful because, you know, they've excavated parts of the old plantation and they really keep those stories of the locals and the settlers alive, and it's just really beautiful. And so I mean, the small parks just can have so much if you just take the time and open your eyes and slow down and really learn and be open to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
for
we're headed there in a couple of weeks, so now we know, definitely where we're going.
Yeah, give Ranger Dusty a ring. Hey, Dusty.
Yes. Hey, Dusty.
Yeah.
We got a friend in common.
Sounds great.
Sandra.
Yes.
make him buy you Natchitoches meat pies. That's where it's at, Natchitoches meat pies.
You just won Matt's heart over because
I'm
you
really
talked about
excited.
Food.
I know what I'm doing.
I just want to learn a little bit more about you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I'm currently based in Fort Worth, Texas. I just moved here this past year from spending 15 years in Austin. And I am the education director at Fort Worth Camera, where I create and put together and teach classes on photography of all sorts. And also including workshops into national parks. We're going to Big Bend in Washington, D.C. and a couple of other great spots next year. So, if you happen to want to join us, fortworthcamera.com is the place to find us. And I've got lots of friends. I was just going to say briefly, I've got lots of friends in other parts of national park stuff. And so if y'all are really interested in photography, I would also suggest y'all look at National Parks at Night. They do some really great astrophotography stuff. And so that's kind of how I learned my astrophotography. So
love it.
Well,
I just think that national parks are just so beautiful. And Biscayne, there's so much to unpack there. What are some of your favorite parts of Biscayne National Park?
Oh, Biscayne. I had the beautiful experience of camping out on Elliott Key one night, which you don't get to do very often. And so that was really great. I love going out to Jones Lagoon. So my friend Ranger Gary got married there with his beautiful husband, Roger. And so Jones Lagoon paddling out there is always one of the highlights. But you know, even just the boat trip out to Boca Chica, I was going through my photos the other day and I think that I have 19 different ways that I've photographed the Hollowell ornamental lighthouse on Boca Chica. And so, you know, so for folks who go to a park and say, okay, I've checked the box, I would like to argue that there is something to be said for going back to a park again and again and really experiencing it in different ways and different times of the year and different days of part of the day, whatever it is, and just really enjoy the park as opposed to sort of checking the box.
Absolutely.
As a plug.
That's 100%. Yes. You have to
totally
revisit.
Totally as a plug. It's not about the box. It's about the experience. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have made friends with a park ranger down there who is just amazing. And but I think I would go back again and again regardless.
Yes. I mean, yes. As soon as you go once, you learn a surface level.
Right.
You go back, you get another layer, and then you realize, oh my gosh, there's more to learn.
There's so much.
And
right.
then yeah. it just keeps on going and going and going because there's so much history and culture there that you can dedicate your whole life to a single national park and still not know everything.
Oh, absolutely. I've been to Biscayne, I think I counted 7 times, and I still haven't snorkeled the Maritime Historical Trail. I still haven't been on Adam's Key. I still haven't, you know, done a lot of things that I would love to do. And so I know that Biscayne is going to be one of those places that I'm going to continue to go to, particularly in January when there's a lot less bugs.
Yes.
And okay. I highly recommend South Florida parks in January, February.
Same.
Less people, mm-hmm. fewer bugs.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Biscayne's 99% water, and you're telling me that there's still more to learn.
There's still more to learn, yeah.
Oh, gosh. And that's just one of our beautiful national parks.
Yes. 419. Long way to go. How many have y'all been to?
Oh.
We actually were talking counted? About this, that we needed to sit down. We have an yeah. Excel sheet that we go through.
We need to tally it.
Yeah.
We haven't updated it in a year. So,
I'm so embarrassed.
It's going to be real bad.
Like, I'm disappointed.
I know.
I'm so disappointed.
I know, right? You know what? We don't collect parks. We experience them.
Oh, ouch. Oh, totally burned. Fair enough. Fair enough. Though I have been 187, really I'll just say that.
Ooh.
Oh, that's amazing.
Gosh. Yes. So. Yeah.
Because I am that nerd.
That's good. No, that is really good because we've been talking about it, but we're just like, you know, there's just so much. Like, I just love it because when we get home, we just research more and more. And then we
Oh, yeah.
go back.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been to Carlsbad 4 times now?
Well, Carlsbad, I think 4. Yeah, it's like my most visited. And yeah, it's one of those things where I totally agree with you. Like, I could go back time and again. And even if I am doing some things that I've done before, it's not like I'm tired of it by any means.
You're still learning.
Happily, yeah. I'm just as excited as my first visit. I love it. Right. It's endlessly inspiring and just like kind of floods me with happiness and delight. It's great.
Yeah, even just the thought of going to a park will do that, right? You get the endorphin rush. You know, next week I'm going to be able to spend a day in Glacier National Park, which I've never done in winter. And so I'm really excited and looking forward to experiencing that. So
That'll be epic.
Be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't really done any like winter-esque national parks. We've been to some in winter, but they're down in the south, like you're saying, Biscayne and Everglades and things like that. Mm-hmm. But like going to Glacier.
Nothing snowy.
In winter, that is a goal. Like Yellowstone, visiting that in the winter is a goal
amazing.
Of ours.
Right.
But right now, because of the RV and like it freezing and, you know, there's just so many things. So we're just like, you know, when we're done with the RV lifestyle, we will then jump into like going during the winters and actually experiencing these beautiful parts of nature, sometimes like how they're intended to be, like just revisiting, relearning, and learning new survival techniques, what the wildlife and ecology is in the winter versus the summer, and how the everything changes and it all works together. So,
right?
Oh yes.
Yeah, I mean, if I had like a big outside goal, it would be to go to every park in all 4 seasons, right?
Oh,
but you know, that's just. That's a little much, so I'm just going to say I'm going to do what I can on that front.
Yeah, right?
I love that, though. Yeah.
Right?
We just need endless resources.
Exactly, right? Hello, lottery.
Yeah.
So, for me, traveling to a national park is good any time of the year. I really prefer the smaller parks in the summer when the larger parks get super crowded.
Yes.
You know, as sort of a tip for people traveling. But, you know, big parks in winter are just heavenly.
Yes.
You know, because it's the silence and it's the, you know, it's everything. It's everything. It's the pristineness. It's the wind. It's, you know, the light.
Oh, yeah.
It's stunning.
Yeah, really. Wait. So much of it.
I cannot wait.
So, Sandra, where can people find you? Like your social media, websites, things like that?
Yeah, so you can find me at nationalparkpatchlady.com, or you can find me on Instagram at nationalparkpatchlady, or you can find me on Twitter at npatchlady. I'm also on Facebook, and I don't think I do anything else that the kids do these days, so that's probably about all the places you can find me.
You're not on TikTok?
No, No.
I think you're going to have a great trip when you go to Glacier, and I can't wait to follow you at National Park Patch Lady, because it's just, there's just so many beautiful things that you bring, and there's so much value you bring to the national parks and the community of national park goers. And that's what this really is to me, is like getting the chance to actually talk to you in person versus just like IG direct Instagram messages or, you know, things like that. It's really beautiful to just learn more about our community of national park lovers, and all these people are passionate about our parks. The stories that you've shared today are going to go beyond helping and inspiring others. It inspired me. By looking in Matt's eyes that it inspired him. But I really, really appreciate you coming in, sharing your story, your love for national parks, and your tips. They've all been so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm crying. wow. I mean, you guys are such an inspiration, and I really appreciate the opportunity. I mean, I'm extraordinarily grateful to sort of share what I can and hopefully, you know, inspire others to just get out there and you know, experience America. So thank you. Yeah,
that was beautiful.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, thank you so much. We were both like geeking out with excitement to talk to you today. So
you've been listening to Parklandia Podcast. We'll be right back after a quick break.
Probiotics aren't a trend anymore. They're a mainstay in the health and wellness aisle of your favorite store. And Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls are the easiest way to introduce a probiotic into your routine. I mean, they're just what they sound like, adorable little pearls that couldn't be easier to take, but they still pack that probiotic punch. Each tiny pearl has 1 billion active cultures and protect against occasional bloating, constipation, and digestive discomfort. And they actually support both digestive and vaginal health, so that's a win-win. And according to my little fact sheet here, they're designed with a triple layer coating that protects each pearl from stomach acid, so they can make it all the way to your small intestine where they're needed most. You probably didn't think we'd be talking about the small intestine today, did you? Well, digestive health is kind of important. If you know, you know. To learn more about Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls and how they can fit into your routine, visit naturesway.com.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory 5-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today's episode is on Biscayne National Park in Florida.
Keys. Speaking of Biscayne, you got to do a solo trip down there, which I was jealous. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, I did. That was more recently than our trip to Biscayne together when we first went. And this was part of a trip that I did, just a road trip to like Everglades, Miami, and the Keys. And I definitely wanted to go back to Biscayne and explore more of it because obviously there's a lot more to do and see here. So what I did was I booked another tour. This time, instead of doing a snorkel trip, I booked a island trip to Boca Chica Key, again with Biscayne National Park Institute, because they do so many amazing tours and they're phenomenal from our snorkel trip there. So I knew I wanted to go out with them again. And Boca Chica Key was something that I really wanted to do. And initially, when you and I were booking the snorkel trip, I was considering like between snorkeling and Boca Chica Key because it's so iconic. This is the one with that lighthouse that Mark Honeywell built in the 30s.
Yes.
Iconic. And it just looks spectacular and really unique. And it's the most visited key in the national park. So it was way up there for me on my list of to-dos.
Yeah, I remember seeing a lot of like private boaters in that area as well. So you don't even have to have a tour if you have your own boat.
Oh, no.
You can go out there by yourself.
Yeah, it's anyone who, you know, has a boat can go out there. And the day I was there, it was a weekend. It was a Sunday. So there was lots of private boaters out there. The marina seemed like it was pretty full. And it was a beautiful day. It was sunny and quite warm. So lots of people out there were just kind of lounging on their boats, cooking out, relaxing. No, it wasn't too like loud or like a party scene or anything like that. It wasn't like South Beach. But it was definitely like filled and bustling. So that was definitely different to see and experience that aspect of the park and that scene.
Yeah, there's many different ways to visit our park.
Yeah, right. And I think some people out there were also camping. You are welcome to camp out here in Boca Chica Key if you can, you know, get yourself there again. And that's an intriguing option. That would be cool to, because I'm sure at night, obviously, most of the boaters go back to the mainland, go back home.
It would be really awesome if you could, like, you know, have your own boat, go camp there, then go do your own snorkeling with our own equipment. And,
yes.
You know, that sounds like a little dream trip to
I
me.
Know.
But
right. I mean, we just got to get our own boat. That's the main
yeah,
barrier.
You know, that's not a big deal, right?
No, not at all. That's, yeah. That's the
Are you
going to
drive
part.
It?
I would be open to driving a boat. It's like open ocean out here, so I'm less worried. I'm not afraid I'm going to like run into something necessarily. I feel like that'd be pretty hard to do.
If you did, that'd be embarrassing.
Yeah. So the key was really fun. We're only out there like wandering around for like an hour. It's a really small key, so an hour seems like it's plenty. But the first thing we did was go to the lighthouse, and our guide led us up. So normally when there's no tour happening on the key, the lighthouse is shut and locked to preserve it from, you know, random people who might want to party in it, which would make sense, I guess. But we got to go up the lighthouse, up this series of like winding narrow stairs. And then from the very top, it's such an amazing view, looking out over the key and the ocean. And you get a really nice panorama of the Miami skyline in the distance, too. A little hazy, but it's clearly there. And kind of wild because like it only took me an hour to get from South Beach to Biscayne. And it looked like it's way off in the distance. Looks like it would be a longer drive, but
oh yeah,
that was great. So after the lighthouse, there's no real like hiking trails or anything like that, but like I kind of wandered around the perimeter of the key, along some of the there's like beaches on the north side of it, or the east side of it rather, and those were some of the prettiest beaches I've ever seen. The water is like turquoise and like white sand, and there's like patches of mangrove trees kind of spurting out of the water along the shore. So nice. I had my bathing suit on, so like I was ready to go swimming, but the water was surprisingly on the chilly side, so didn't really want to do that. I also didn't have a towel, so I wasn't
Was it clear or was it murky water?
It was really clear. So if I had snorkel equipment, I probably would have been more inclined, and a wetsuit to keep
me warm. Yeah, definitely the wetsuit.
Yeah, so just a gorgeous, gorgeous little key out here, and some forest, some really bright green forest to wander through. And yeah, that was wonderful. And I also learned about, there's not obviously a limited amount of wildlife out here, but the guide told us shockingly that there are raccoons, which I don't understand how they got there, but he's like, oh, they're everywhere. And I'm like,
that's
how?
Kind of true though.
Yeah. And then also animals called wood rats, which get water from coconuts. They get fresh. They need, like, obviously they can't drink salt water. So their water source on the island is, they kind of like gnaw their way into coconuts and drink coconut water. So when we were initially there, like we mentioned, it was during a government shutdown. So the visitor center was closed. There was no exhibits we could see. There was no park movie. So I was eager to check that out for the first time. And it was great. Like, did not disappoint. A huge visitor center.
It never does, right?
Never does. So much to see and learn about, especially pertaining to the copious amounts of wildlife here and the different ecosystems and the animals that live where, how long they've lived here, just, and then the changing geography of the park over the past several thousand years.
Right.
Lots to discover and read about. And then I saw the park movie, which was in the same room where Sandra's photography exhibit was. So around the like perimeter of the room and in like the hallway outside of it were her beautiful photographs. And you could read all about those and look at them and then sit down and watch this excellent park movie hosted by a ranger who's kind of guiding you through the different keys and showing you and pointing out the different wildlife and plant species and talking more about the history, especially like Spite Highway and how it's a hiking trail now. So that was cool to see and learn more about from that direct perspective.
Yeah, I really feel that Biscayne is mostly about the wildlife and the ecology because there's just so many layers from the ocean to the Keys, even to the mainlands. There's so much to really dive into there.
Yeah, you're completely surrounded by it. Yeah, I mean, literally dive into it. And even if you're just walking around, if you're on one of the Keys like I was, it's you're still immersed in it. And it's incredible and a very inspiring place. And the type of place where I could totally see, and I agree with Sandra, like I could come back time and again and never ever get tired of it, certainly, and always have something new to see, new to do. It's just one of those very special places.
My favorite.
All right, now it's that time of the episode where we share with each other our favorite parts of Biscayne National Park. We haven't told each other our answers, so it's all a surprise. Matt, what was your favorite thing to do here?
Well, I think it is pretty hard to beat snorkeling, especially for someone like me who's terrified of that type of thing, or who was terrified my entire life of that type of thing in this setting. So it was not only really fun, but it had that another level of like meaning to me,
it really
being
did.
Able to do that and jump off a boat. And how I was just so pleasantly surprised by how quickly everything kind of clicked into place. And I instantly felt calm and excited and just like, yes, this is wonderful. And I could just do this all day. I could do this time and again. And it was mesmerizing. So I would say that was my favorite thing.
Absolutely. I 110% times a million agree, because when you just jump in that water and you get into it for your first time, you're just in it. It's like you're in a movie. It's like you're in this beautiful, beautiful experience of like experiencing wildlife for the first time, and you can see it all happening in front of you. It's like it basically goes into a fisheye lens,
right.
Where you're just seeing everything happening. And like I was saying earlier about chasing different fish, and then all of a sudden I'd be distracted, and there's another one. Mm-hmm. It was just such a fun experience because there was no other worries in the world.
No, you're so focused.
On one fish.
Yeah.
Like that's what I was focused on and what was happening around it, and just seeing how this wildlife is wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. That's an important part too, the intense focus. And I felt that with very specific things. Like all of a sudden the only things I'm concentrating on are breathing correctly, you know, like need to remind myself, okay, breathe. And then yes. Making sure water's not going into my snorkel, my mask and stuff. And then just aside from that, looking at everything and experiencing it and being, you know, completely captivated. So it's just from like my normal life as a creature who lives on land, like this is completely different and forces you to just recalibrate and focus entirely on different things. And that
I could have
refreshing.
Done it for days. Like literally, yes. There was just...
It's like therapy, yeah.
It is. It is therapy. Kind of like Sandra was saying, you know, national parks, when you're in it and you're really in it, mm-hmm. It just relieves all anxiety, all fears, all depression, all everything.
Yes.
And all you get to do is focus.
Yeah. 100%. Yes.
Yes.
So let's talk about things that you should bring to Biscayne National Park if you're planning on visiting.
Reservations?
That's the number one. Because unless you're lucky enough to have a yacht or a boat or something, you absolutely need that.
Even then, get a reservation and go on one of these tours because you're going to learn so much. The guides are really well-educated. They know what they're talking about, and they're going to know the best places to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one of those parks where there isn't a lot you can do unless you have a reservation to do something, an activity, a tour, because there's very limited things on the mainland. There's that jetty trail and excellent visitor center, but you're really missing out if you don't go out, and you need to go out, you know, quite a ways, like miles out to get to the Keys and then beyond that to go snorkeling. So reservations are important and as far in advance as possible. They weren't difficult. Like we made ours like a week in advance or whatever, and it seemed totally fine.
Yeah.
But still, obviously that can't hurt.
And then bringing sunscreen, but like waterproof sunscreen is huge. And then learning how to apply waterproof like sunscreen, mm-hmm. because I've made the mistake where I like, you know, I'll put it on and then I'll jump right in the ocean. And you have to like let it like basically cure for a couple minutes to really actually just sink into you so that way you're not getting burnt.
Yeah, for sure. And then if you have any wetsuit stuff, by all means bring that. It would save you some money so you don't have to rent those in addition.
Or be like us and we bought our own now after that.
Now we're ready, yes.
Yes. We have our own fins, which are really cute shoe fins.
I know. I want to wear them just as shoes and walk around with them. They're so cool.
Wetsuits. And we even have the snorkeling life vests with a whistle just in case.
Right.
Because it's always better to be prepared. And that whistle is more if, you know, anything goes wrong and you might need it.
Just in case.
And most of the times we're in a very safe environment, but it's always better to be prepared. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then this isn't so much a thing to bring, but something to bear in mind. And you touched on this a little bit, but if you're going snorkeling and you're like you and you have facial hair, then you might not be expecting this, but like what did you wind up having to do?
Oh, I had to put Vaseline all over my face, all around the eyes and everything. And it still didn't even work that great. So when you want to go snorkeling, you definitely want to shave. You want to have as bare a face as you can.
Right.
So that way you can, the mask can properly seal to your face.
Yeah. And the Vaseline helps with that. So basically if you look like Dumbledore, you probably should not go snorkeling because you need a lot of Vaseline if you're like a wizard.
Yes. Yeah. Wizards beware.
Yeah. Right. Probably not the activity for you, but good to know. So I think it's safe to say that in addition to having some of my favorite / most ridiculous history of all the national parks, Biscayne holds a very special place in my heart for helping me overcome my irrational fears. All my fears are irrational.
Yeah, you've come a long way from your Jaws fearing days.
I mean, to be clear, I'm still terrified of Jaws, but this game is basically the emotional training wheels I needed to help me take this new leap, both literally and figuratively.
And we've barely even scratched the surface here, because truly it's 95% of this enormous and beautiful place is below the surface. You've been listening to Parklandia, a show about national parks.
Parklandia is a production of iHeartRadio.
Created by Matt Kerouac, Brad Kerouac, and Christopher Hasiotis.
Produced and edited by Mike Johns.
Our executive producer is Christopher Hasiotis.
Our researcher is Jesslyn Shields.
A special thanks goes out to Gabrielle Collins, Crystal Waters, and the rest of the Parklandia crew.
And hey, listeners, if you're enjoying the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people like you find our show.
You can keep up with us on social media as well. Check out our photos from our travels on Instagram at Parklandia Pod and join in on the conversation in our Facebook group, Parklandia Rangers.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And as always, thank you for listening.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.